And we're going to talk about the Spokane Symphony Chorale, and we'll begin with that lovely luminescent opening they did to the Vaughan Williams Serenade to Music. It is the choral opening to the Serenade of Music by Vaughan Williams from a concert given last year by the Spokane Symphony and, more importantly, by the Spokane Chorale, whose conductor is Christina Ploger Hekmatpana. Welcome, Christina.
Thank you so much. It was so great to get to hear that again.
Yeah,
it's a different vantage point a few months later, you know?
It sure is, yeah. And that's always good a few months later than when you've forgotten the little details and you just hear that overall effect, which is so beautiful. So earlier we're making reference to what they call, also unfairly, the four families of the orchestra: the woodwinds, the brass, the strings, and the percussion. But let's go to the essential fifth family, the human voice, which is your world. And even before we get into it, let's talk about your world of the human voice, because you range from jazz singer to choral conductor, don't you? Talk about you and the voice.
Well, I love the voice. I think there's just a lot of different ways of expressing yourself. So if you have a voice and you have 12 tones, you use them however you see fit at that point in time. And, you know, growing up, I did a lot of jazz, so I'm very partial to that as a form of communication and expression. So I love doing that. But I also really love choral music, because what so many voices can do together is very different. It's not better or worse, but it's just a very different thing than what one does by themselves. And especially given the great composers that have left us this body of work that it in so many cases is really transformative to be a small part of a larger whole. And you don't get that, like when I'm working as a jazz singer, what's so great is the freedom to express and change as you go, but trying to bring something to cognizant, mm-hmm. you know, completion with so many different mm-hmm. voices is a really wonderful undertaking. And like I said, learning how to be part of that bigger thing mm-hmm. is great.
In your own life and experience, does one inform the other? Or are they kind of two different worlds of those parts of your life?
Both.
Of course.
I mean, sometimes it's different stuff. But I know that as a singer, it's difficult to find authentic ways to engage in really experiencing music theory. And I think that a lot of melodic instruments have that trouble in understanding harmony because you're only playing one note at a time. Mm-hmm. And so when you learn to listen well for jazz, then it informs the way that you hear harmony. And that's the way that they interact for me. So my listening in a choral setting is very harmonic, obviously, and I learned to do that through jazz.
Mm-hmm. Nice. And you certainly, you're the choral director for Eastern Washington University, too, and you had that wonderful stage in your career as the director of the Spokane Area Children's Chorus. So you've had many, many different aspects of this, but talk about the unique function of the symphony chorale, of a symphony chorale, of those people and their involvement and what they do.
It's beautiful. I sincerely love being with people whose music is their avocation, because it's very different than dealing with people whose music is their vocation. Yeah. And there's a freshness and a joy that they can have that they bring to me when I've been living in music 24 hours a day for weeks. And then I come to them and, you know, they've been working at the courthouse all day or they've been doing something like that. And they're so comforted and joyful about the whole process that it's really a beautiful thing to get to work with people who for whom it's an avocation. And I think, you know, Robert Shaw wrote about that, the spirit of the amateur. And for them, it's this beautiful experience and opportunity because it's a professional organization. Mm-hmm. And the product needs to be professional, and they're going to play with a professional symphony. And so the bar is very high, which I love, and they love striving for as well. And yet you get to work with people, as I said, that bring a freshness to it.
Nice. And I don't know how you're going to answer this, but I only get to ask the questions. Talk about the rehearsal process, how you get there, what you do in a rehearsal, some of your strategies there.
Right. Well, for instance, we have four concerts by the middle of January. And there's 16 rehearsals. So it's about four rehearsals worth of work for each concert, which is not a lot. Mm-hmm. And so what I like to do is look at each piece and look at the kernel of what that piece actually is and try and teach from that. So if it's based on a certain melody, then we're going to start by learning that and then understand how everything else supports that. So you really try and look for the essence of a thing and introduce it with that, and then have enough trust to let the people experience it. So first, you know, go way into the smallest, to the micro, and look at this is the thing that makes this work and teach that first, and then go way out to the macro and just read the whole thing. Mm. And so many times people do much better than you think is possible. and it comes down to trust.
But that does make a lot of sense rather than just plunge into the macro immediately.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, to take it apart.
Well, and then you can see where the things, the issues that need to be examined are.
So possibly apply that maybe to a few examples. You said you have four things between now and January. I assume working backwards, that would be Beethoven Ninth. It would be the Baroque concert. Mm-hmm. What are the other two?
Well, it's working back from the middle of January, it's the Rachmaninoff Bells.
Oh, that's right.
Right, okay. Right, which I'm really excited about because I've never prepared that before. So this is, exciting. And then Beethoven 9 on New Year's Eve. There's Holiday Pops, the 22nd and 23rd.
Right.
Yep, and we get to be with the children's chorus too, which is great. And then the Christmas Oratorio. We'll do parts of the Christmas Oratorio. Don't worry, not the whole thing.
On the Baroque concert. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so all of a sudden, so you will have spent like 3 months preparing, but then within 1 month's time,
it all happens.
They have to have assimilated all of that material.
Right, so it's all happening concurrently. Yeah.
Nice. And kind of what's the vibe in the corral? Do they have their own sense of identity? Do they have their own structure?
Very much so. Yeah. And it's changing all the time, you know. And that's what's really, really beautiful. There's a committed set of volunteers they're all volunteers, but people who are willing to take on leadership roles. So they have a committee with, you know, a president, which mm-hmm. was Brent Wilcox and is now Bob Jesperson, mm-hmm. And then a board of people. So section leaders, which are musical, and section representatives, which do a lot of organizing of the people. Mm-hmm. So there are people that are giving quite a lot of energy toward making sure that there is an identity and that new people are brought in and welcomed. Yeah.
So there's a social group sense to it, too.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and some of them have been there for 43 years, and some of them are about to start this fall. So there's this wonderful breadth of age and experience, and they all bring different things. And this is what I love about the difference between a children's chorus or a college or a symphony chorale, is that you get a certain sound when you are very age specific. And what I love about the chorale, and your wife is the one that started this mm-hmm. metaphor for me, which I love, is that you may have some of those younger voices that work a certain way. And when you have a whole group of them, it's like having an entire bouquet of baby's breath. Mm-hmm. And then when you get people with ossified cartilage and a bunch of experience and all those things, then you get some dahlias and some peonies and irises. And the way that it all works together is awesome. So if you just get them arranged in a way that they can hear and sing with their best sound, you get this incredible bouquet. And I love that about the chorale. And I love that every time we start a work, a large work, you know, somebody will say, this is my 10th whatever, you know, this is my 10th Carmina Burana. And I'm like, that is awesome, because the reading process, when you're introducing, which I'm using quote hands because you're not really introducing mm-hmm. to them, what you're introducing is your idea and your art interpretation mm-hmm. or what you think Eckhart's is mm-hmm. For that work. It's not an issue of whether the sound is going to come out. It's an issue of shaping it because of the people that have the experience. And then the young people get this really well-supported thing moving forward, because you just don't have the struggle of learning. You have the struggle of shaping instead. Mm. And that's a great struggle. It's exciting.
Christina Ploger Hekmapana, the conductor of the Spokane Symphony Chorale, and all the wonderful things that go on there, especially in those four very significant things they do between the 8th of December and middle January.
So, right.
A lot of great stuff. Well, thank you. Thank you for what you bring.
Thank
today.
You.
I think what we should do, simply because now that you've really talked about it, this was only a 2-minute long thing. Let's hear that little excerpt of the Serenade to Music again, just to enjoy that wonderful sound of the chorale, along with especially the strings of the orchestra. The Spokane Symphony Chorale from last season.